Welcome to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. My name is Lauren Bongiorno, nationally board certified health coach and founder and CEO of Risely Health, where we help people and families impacted by type 1 diabetes take ownership over their lives so that they can transform with more freedom and confidence. Everyone has a different reason to be here. You might be seeking knowledge, support, or community, but at your core, I know that you long for something deeper. You're here for transformation. And that's what the Reclaim Your Rise podcast is all about.
So much of the conflict that we were seeing was coming from really well-intentioned parents that care so much and are deeply scared when they're seeing a severe low on the Dexcom for a long time, or, you know, a high that isn't being treated fast enough, how that not only affected the mental health of the parent and how they approached it, but then how it would be perceived by their child in the moment, feeling supported versus feeling hounded.
A quick reminder before we start the show that nothing you hear on the Reclaim Your Rise podcast should be a substitute for personalized professional medical advice. Please always consult your physician or other medical professional before making any changes to your diet, insulin dosages, or healthcare plan. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to the show. This week's guest is Christina Roth, and Christina is the CEO of the Diabetes Link, formerly known as the College Diabetes Network, which you may have heard of before. Christina has been living with type 1 diabetes for over 20 years, and I just have to say, we love to see a leader of a diabetes organization that has been through the same challenges as the people the organization supports. So what is the Diabetes Link? It initially started back in 2009 as the College Diabetes Network as a way to address the unique challenges that specifically college students face, from access to better healthcare and resources to creating a community that really understands and can support you through, you know, the day-to-day challenges that come up with this disease. Now, over a decade later, there are more than 20 chapters at colleges and universities across the United States, and the rebrand has allowed the organization to grow and support not only type 1s in college, but type 1s navigating young adulthood and all the transitions that come even beyond the college years. This episode is a fantastic listen for parents of teens and young adults to listen to, or really anyone in those late teen and early 20 years living with type 1 diabetes. So without further ado, help me welcome my guest, Christina Roth, to the show, and let's rise. Christina, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you on today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course, of course. So we're going to open up with the question that I ask all of my guests, which is, can you share a story about a time that you reclaimed your rise as a person with type 1 diabetes? We know that the theme of Risely and what it's rooted in is helping everyone reclaim their rise, meaning their to rise above their challenges and rise above their diagnosis. So what story comes to mind?
I actually think that, ironically, it really is around when I started college and sort of the shift in how I thought about diabetes and who I was that happened at the beginning of college that really led to the creation of the College Diabetes Network. I was definitely one of those individuals as a teenager that wanted nothing to do with diabetes. So probably a pretty typical teenager. And it really wasn't until college that, one, I had the tools to be successful. That was around when CGM was starting to come out. And so for me, that was a really helpful tool. But it was also when I started being open to talking to somebody else that had diabetes. And those two things combined just changed how I was able to think about diabetes, what it brought to my life, and to really rise above it.
Well, it sounds like college was a transitional and transformational time for how you decided to manage your diabetes, but maybe up until then, it wasn't always like that. Is that accurate to say?
I think that's very accurate.
Okay, so let's go back. Tell me early on, what was your relationship to diabetes? You were diagnosed about 20 years ago, so how old were you?
I was 14 and I was a freshman in high school.
Okay. So you're a freshman in high school, you get diagnosed. Describe to me like what it was like growing up as a teenager with diabetes and how you related to it.
I really took it on at first, not wanting it to get in the way, not wanting it to limit who I was. And I also was a typical teenager and that I refused help. I wanted to do it all on my own. But what I found pretty quickly was that I burnt out very early. So even though I hadn't had it that long, I had just exhausted myself in attempting to get control over this disease. And as we all know, it's a disease you can't exactly control as hard as you might try. And so that was really defeating for me and really led to an apathy around diabetes. And I didn't realize until after I had the tools and was doing better, the impact that that had on me cognitively, from a physical standpoint, from an emotional standpoint. So I felt like a typical teenager growing up, and I absolutely did typical teenager things. But in retrospect, there was so much that I wasn't able to take advantage of because I just didn't have the energy or didn't realize what it was taking from me.
Yeah, we talk about this a lot too, how teenage years to begin with are difficult because you have hormonal changes and you're trying to fit into friend groups and figure out who you are. And, you know, you have crushes on people and it's like, do they like me back and all those things. And then you add diabetes on top of it. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, well, I'm not going to deal with this, or I really don't want to deal with this. But in a way, it does slow you down if you don't take control of it and deal with it. So when you got to college, what was the thing that really helped you shift your perspective, I guess, to, oh, there's more I could be doing?
For me, it was, there were a few sort of steps to it. The first was that JDRF was running the continuous glucose monitor studies for the first time. So it was before it was available through insurance. That was the first time that I had a tool that helped me shape my behavior. It helped me understand what foods did, what exercise did. It wasn't just my doctor or my mom telling me not to eat something or that I shouldn't or what I should be doing, but I could see that information really objectively in front of me. And that was really empowering to me because it started to make sense. So with that information, that knowledge, that really helped me start to transform some of my habits, some of my behavior. But as we all know, it's really hard to do and really hard to keep up any behavior. And that's really where having it reinforced that I just had so much more energy. I could think so much more clearly. It allowed me to be the person that I knew that I always was and could be. And I didn't want to compromise that again. So I really wanted to maintain that level of control is not the right word, but that level of management. And for me, the key to that was talking to other people that lived with it.
Okay. And, you know, it's interesting because when you think about today's day and age, anyone who's diagnosed pre-college, they're, you know, a lot of them, a high percentage. I know there's accessibility challenges with technology and diabetes, but there's a high percentage of people who are going to college with a CGM. And so for you, that was the huge transformational, you know, tool. But for a lot of people, they already have that as a base. And what at the base of it, though, it sounds like is the being more mindful of what your numbers were, the direction they were going, and how you can use that information as feedback to make better informed decisions. Like that's really the empowerment piece that you were missing. But that is that what you would say is descriptive of what you were feeling at the time?
Absolutely. And I think there's two really interesting points to that, in that it has become more normal and it is much more accessible. And I think the two challenges that I faced to some extent, but are much more relevant today, are just the mental and emotional burden that having all of that data creates. So for me, it was so novel and it allowed me to feel empowered. But as we all know, it is overwhelming and it's exhausting and it's yelling at you all the time. And it's telling you what you're doing wrong all the time too. That just takes such a toll. And I think that I've seen that even more so today and in the years since I was in college, because there is so much happening in the world. And it's just one more enormous thing on top of it. I think the other blessing when I was on CGM in college was that it the technology didn't exist to share that data like it does today. And so while my mom, I'm sure, would have loved to have seen it all the time while I was in college, and that might have helped her feel less anxious and even at times given me some peace of mind, I think that's a huge burden and a huge responsibility for families to have these days, because it does blur the lines of being independent with management and empowering versus, you know, continuing to be a really active part of it. And I think that's so much of what these college years or these years after high school and after you've lived at home, regardless of what your path is, so much of it is around figuring out how you manage things yourself and being able to make the mistakes and learn from them. And that's scary to watch on a screen from 100 miles away or thousands of miles away. So I think I was very lucky in that respect. But I see that as a huge challenge that families face today.
I want to dive into both of those. Let's talk about the mental, emotional piece first, because I was one of the questions I had planned that I really wanted to ask you is, what do you think are the biggest challenges that type ones have going to college? And I want to hear if there's any other, you know, things that come to mind, but I know for sure it's the balancing act, right? The balancing act of you have your regular responsibilities and then you have the diabetes on top of it. But in addition to that, what other challenges do you see that T1Ds have specifically for college that they don't maybe have in earlier years, even if they've been living with type one for a few years?
Yeah, I think the first one that comes to mind is really around wanting to reinvent yourself or be able to meet new people because they don't know who you are. And so there's no baseline understanding of who you are or that diabetes is part of your life. And so I think at this time in particular, as people are just meeting others for the first time, they don't necessarily want that to be diabetes that they meet first. They want it to be them and who they are as a person and what they do and what they like and their passions. And they want diabetes to be sort of secondary. And so it can be really hard to bring up having diabetes or what that actually means and actually articulate the burden of what that means. Because often you don't want to, you just want to be able to enjoy new friends. So I think that balancing that is a lot at this time of life, and just wanting to be normal and not have to think about diabetes as part of it.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that a lot of people with type one, myself included, you don't even want to be a burden to your immediate family, right? When you have low or high blood sugars, never mind going to meet your roommate for the first time and have to tell them, hey, there might be alarms going off in the middle of the night. And do you still want to be my roommate in that sense, right? I didn't have a CGM in college either. And so my parents not only didn't have, or I shouldn't say either, I didn't have a CGM and they didn't have access to share. So I actually didn't have to deal with that conversation. It was mostly just the emergency of, hey, if my blood sugar goes low and this is what to do. And that luckily, you know, never happened. I wasn't such a burden in that sense, or I didn't have to worry to be a burden to my roommate in that sense. But I can see how that definitely causes some, you know, stressors of having to have that conversation and not wanting to be defined by diabetes or not liked because you have diabetes. I think another one too that I want to get your opinion on is a lot of the clients that we coach that their kids are in college, a big thing is like routine, because we know that with type one, we often thrive when we're in routine, when we are kind of working out at similar times, when we're eating similar things. In college, what it throws at you is like all these different, even like you could have classes on Monday that you don't have for the rest of the week, and that schedule is different than Tuesday and Thursday, and then your Wednesday and Friday can look different. And speak to that a little bit too, is the actual real blocks that can come up when you aren't in so much of a routine that you're used to with diabetes.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really challenging part of this time in life, because, you know, we talked about the word control before and how diabetes isn't exactly something you can control. But at this time of life, similar to all the hormones that are already happening, you don't have control over your schedule necessarily. And when you can, maybe when you're eating or what is available to eat and what type of physical activity and how often, if you're walking miles to class one day and or actually going to the gym, it just affects you so differently. So I think that at this time in life, a lot of people can put in a lot of work and really care about wanting to do better and not see the results because there are so many factors outside of their control. And I think that in and of itself can be so disheartening because it does take so much work and people are working really hard and paying attention and trying. And yet it's still outside their control. So I think that that is just such an inherent challenge at this time in life. And as you see, you know, the actual research data in the population, shockingly, as you get older and have more control over your life, your control tends to even out and get a lot better. But I think that that's so many of the young adults that are that we work with, and that it sounds like you know you're coaching and working with their families. It's they're in the midst of this time where they're just trying to make the best of the control that they have when they have control, but it's very challenging without a routine.
Absolutely. And at the same time, kind of what I'll challenge or just speak to is I think that college is also it's a bridge. College is a time where you're bridging your childhood and where your parents or your caregivers are really the caretakers for you and your adult life and that responsibility that comes with having a job and having, you know, living alone full time, or, you know, you're more out in the world by yourself and have more responsibilities. And I think that while we want, as parents, you want your kids to have so much fun in college and to live quote unquote normally and to absorb everything, I also think it's a good time to also encourage them to find what works for them with their diabetes. And it doesn't mean that they have to create so much routine around their life, but how do you do that even just a little bit? Like, how do you create routine? Even if your class schedule is crazy and you're eating lunch at different times of day, okay, well, how do you make sure that maybe you're, you know, working out at similar times a day on certain days and you know your patterns a little bit more there? Or like, what can you do in a small way to make diabetes a little bit easier for you and help your child make that connection piece? Because I think that it'll also set the type 1 college student up for more success after they get out of college as well, because they're already starting to understand that I can't control all of my outside factors and circumstances, but I can create certain systems and routines in my life that serve me and my diabetes.
Absolutely. No, I think that's a really, really important point. I'm glad that you reinforce that. I think, you know, in retrospect, I found working out at a specific time each day, even if it was different each day of the week, I was able to at least look at Tuesdays across Tuesdays across Tuesdays and try to sort of set that up and learn from the trends. And it does take a lot of work to be able to sort of keep track for a little while, but it makes such a big difference to be able to do that trial and error. And it is so individual for people to see what works for them and is a really good fit and not necessarily a really arduous chore to fit in or do on top of everything else that they're already doing.
Absolutely. And circling back to the second point that you had made earlier about the Dexcom Share and the parents, you know, the boundaries and how involved they are with the numbers, I was looking earlier at one of the free downloads that the Diabetes Link has, which is for caregivers of type 1 kids going off to college. And there's a page in there that has a section I loved and I wanted to bring into this conversation, which it listed out 4 promises of a caregiver to make to their child. And the promises were, 1, I won't ask you what your blood sugar is unless you bring it up. 2, I'll let you be the one who tells others that you have it. 3, I'll send you care packages with low snacks and other supplies and even help you pay for your supplies. And 4, I won't overreact or get mad when you tell me the truth. And I love those so much because I think that what it really comes down to is communication and expectation setting. And if you kind of just go in thinking that, oh, I'm going to, you know, micromanage my child's diabetes from across the country or, you know, several miles away if they're not going, you know, close to home, and that it's going to be smooth sailing, like, that you're not really setting yourself up for success. So can you talk a little bit about those promises and, you know, what brought you and the team to create them?
Sure. Yeah, those promises started out when we originally created them, I mean, over 10 years ago, were really around a communication agreement and a communication contract. So much of it was around sort of how to have that conversation and see what worked for you and your family. Because so much of the conflict that we were seeing was coming from really well-intentioned parents that care so much and are deeply scared when they're seeing a severe low on the Dexcom for a long time, or, you know, a high that isn't being treated fast enough. So I think that so much of those agreements was really to create that baseline discussion so that there was really open communication around how that not only affected the mental health of the parent and how they approached it, but then how it would be perceived by their child in the moment, you know, feeling supported versus feeling hounded in some cases.
Absolutely. And, you know, the rebrand from the College Diabetes Network to the Diabetes Link, where you're serving not just now college students, but all of young adults, is kind of key and goes off of that, because those communication tools that you were just talking about, that really is applicable to, first of all, everybody, but even more so young adults. And especially, I think, young adults who are diagnosed, you know, in their early 20s or mid 20s, and they're still, you know, looking to their parents for advice or support, or maybe they just got their first job and they moved to a different city. And once again, their parents don't have that, you know, direct day-to-day contact with them in person. And I just I'm thinking of right now, we have this one client right now in one of our group coaching programs who, she's in her mid-20s. She moved to New York. I forget what her home state is, but her mom's back there, and got diagnosed here while she was, you know, in her job and all that. And the mom texts her, like, you know, every morning, "Hey, I just looked at your numbers. You must have had, you know, a really crappy night of sleep," or, "Hey, you must feel really, you know, bad today because of your numbers you had last night." And the mom is, you know, trying to say that because she's trying to say, "Hey, I see you. I understand what maybe you're feeling like. And I'm here if you, you know, just as like a soundboard if you need me." But our client is like, "That's not what I need. I don't need to be reminded once I got my blood sugar down in the morning that like I had a terrible night of sleep. I'm just trying to move on with my day." And so what she did that has helped is really communicating what her needs are to her mom. And her mom loves her and is like, "Oh, I didn't even realize that was bothering you." And then retraining how the conversation, you know, should go. So, you know, going into the rebrand and how you're branching out now to more people and not just focus solely on those the creation of chapters in colleges for people with diabetes, like what are, I guess, the biggest changes, you know, that have been made since the rebrand, but also what is the heart and what is going to stay the same of the Diabetes Link?
Yeah, no, great question. I think so much of the evolution of the College Diabetes Network over the past 10 to 12 years has really been being the only organization in the diabetes space that focused on the young adult population exclusively. There's so many amazing organizations and resources out there, but really focusing on being that bridge for this time in life and just the really unique set of circumstances and life events and transitions that happened during this time, but also just how the best way to actually communicate, you know, what is, you know, what social media platform is actually being used today, that changes over time. So often, you know, other organizations have incredible resources, but maybe those aren't reaching this population in a way that's really helpful. So that was a gap that we saw as we were working with more and more chapters and more young adults, is that they were facing a lot of the same challenges, and some of the solutions already existed. Some of them needed to be created, but we really began to move into the space of education, both helping to connect them to those resources that existed, and then when they didn't exist, working with our young adults and clinical advisors to actually just create them based off of real world experiences and tips. So all of that knowledge and wisdom that you gain through going through these transitions and living them, you know, doesn't end with you. because everybody, so many thousands go through it every single year. So it doesn't have to be so hard. And so to just make that a little bit easier. And I think so much of what the Diabetes Link does is take that original core of peer support and being empowered with the right information is transformative. We were able to really focus on the college population because of where we got started and how our campus chapters were created and just the perfect storm that college is. But what we found is that so much of the challenges or concerns, they didn't end in college. They continued. And those transitions were repeated in different ways throughout, you know, the few years after college, or if people didn't have access to college or decided not to go, a lot of the same challenges were just as applicable. So for us, what we found as we did a lot of our strategic planning a few years ago was that our education resources and our support was so much more widely applicable. And we were hearing that many more people were using it and benefiting from it. We had a lot of clinical providers that were using this information in their clinics, but that our name was really a barrier to the use, that people that weren't in college didn't necessarily understand how they identified with the College Diabetes Network. And so CDN and the core of our college community and that network will always be at the core of the Diabetes Link, because that is, it's where we came from. It's that regenerating population every single year. And it's staying relevant to the current population of young adults, whatever generation that is. And that's really our commitment as an organization, is to be there, to exist, to be a safe space and a curator for young adults with diabetes at any given time. The College Diabetes Network is what makes that possible, from creating the basis for those peer connections, and then taking those online to widen those conversations, all of the education resources that are more widely applicable, that can be used more widely now by so many more people. And then our leadership development work, really, because all of our chapters are run by students. That's so important to who we are as an organization. So many of them are incredible leaders or want to give back to others in the community. And so our leadership development work was really born out of that. But as we know, that goes long after college into graduate school and into careers and being a young professional, and networking and just benefiting from living with this disease. So it's really the Diabetes Link is a continuation of the College Diabetes Network. But that will always be at the core of who we are and why we do what we do.
What you're doing is so needed. And I can't remember the first time that I originally heard about the chapters at colleges, but I went through college and I don't think I knew a single soul. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think I went through 4 years of college without knowing any other type one. And there was like 13,000 people on my campus, which is like, I'm sure there was other type ones there, but I don't know if maybe my school didn't have a chapter, or if, you know, I just was so closed off because I was at the time of even showing my, you know, my CGM or I didn't even have a CGM at the time. So it was my pump out. Like, I would not do that because I was so insecure of my, you know, difference that I had. But all to say, I could so see the benefit of having that and just that immediate connection with other people when you're so far away from home, if you are going away from college. So I love that that's always going to be at the heart of what you're doing, but now you've, you know, spread your wings and are, you know, making other, have other resources for people beyond college. The one very specific question that I have for you that just I was thinking about was, I think one of the hardest challenges in navigating your teenage years, college years into early adulthood, and what I hear from a lot of people all the time through my Instagram DMs, is the transition for insurance. and that whole process. Do you have any resources that support people through that? Because I think that that's such a pain point for a lot of people. And I would personally love to be able to send people to, you know, your site if you do have resources for that.
Absolutely. And that's, it's really interesting because as we even looked at, well, which ages do we target? That was always such an important transition, is the transition of insurance, but especially making sure that, you know, you look at a lot of data and it cuts off at 23 or 24. And we wanted to make sure that that really critical 26 age, when a lot of people do roll off their insurance, although that can happen, you know, from 17 and past, that we would be able to really answer those questions. So a few years ago, we actually worked with partners in the space, a few different diabetes organizations, to put together an Insurance 101 resource. And it's videos, it's interviews with young adults that experienced different challenges with insurance, but then also with experts that are able to give some insights into how to navigate those challenges or things to think of to get ahead of some of those challenges. So those Insurance 101 resources are available on our Young Adult Resource Hub with the Diabetes Link, and really were the test case for us to launch our entire resource hub completely digitally and really focus on videos and content that can be used on TikTok, on Instagram, in ways that are actually helpful in a split second in your everyday life. But so the Insurance 101 resources are something that we see used quite a bit, but that landscape changes. So we are actively going to be updating those over the next few years. And we'll have periodic updates coming out, but we'll actually be working on clinically validating some of those resources so that healthcare providers across the space can know that they can trust them, you know, whether they're familiar with the Diabetes Link or not, and hopefully make them much more widely usable.
No, I think that I'm really happy to hear that. And I will link that link in the show notes of this episode. So if anybody's listening and wants that directly, I will plug that for you there, or for parents who, if you want to send it to your young adult kids. But Christina, thank you so much for going over all that with me. I have one last question for you. If you could tell your college self, or young adult self, I should say, one thing, like, that you wish you would have known then that you know now, what do you think that would have been?
That's a hard one. I think, I don't know, a few things are going through my mind, to be totally honest. But I think the one that stands out is that this will make you a stronger person, and you'll gain so many benefits from living with diabetes and the strength and the expertise that gives you. But the community that you'll find professionally and personally as a result of it will serve you for the rest of your life. There's a lot of different things that I'd looking back. Now I'm going to think through a whole bunch of things to say, but I think so much of it is that this isn't, joining the community or reaching out or gaining information isn't just about you and your diabetes or your clinical health. So much of it is, you know, who you are as a person and who you are professionally and how to take advantage of every aspect of who you are and what you're good at. And diabetes is part of that, and finding how to really use that and benefit from it is, I think, part of growing into having it and having it be part of who you are without that being a bad thing.
I love that. And I lied. I have one more question for you. If you had one piece of advice for parents and caregivers of young adults that have type 1 diabetes, what would your advice to them be?
Oh boy. I would say, I'm not a parent of a college student or young adult with diabetes. However, as somebody that lived through it and works with thousands of young adults with diabetes and their families. Take a deep breath. They're going to be okay. You've given them the tools to be successful. And now what they need isn't necessarily for you to continue giving them the tools, but it's supporting them in using those tools that you've already given them. So I think that shift in the dynamic of the relationship is what happens at this time. And it's almost harder than giving them the tools because you have to actually watch them use them and see mistakes and be okay with that and support them through that. But that's so much of what this time in life is about. And they will be best served that way. And connecting with other parents will be your saving grace because they will also be just as anxious as you are. And so when you want to talk to your child, you can talk to another parent who desperately needs to talk to you too.
There you go. I love that piece of advice. Well, I appreciate you coming on, sharing all about the Diabetes Link with us, sharing all your insights, and you should be so proud of yourself for the community that you've cultivated, all the resources. I know that they are helping so many people, and I hope that this episode is, you know, something that reaches far and wide, and more people who need access to those resources will be able to get it from you. So thanks for coming on, Christina.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.